The Fan on Demand.
In for Nigel Reed, I'm Alex Ixero.
And I'm Bob Yerushi.
And this is the Soccer Show on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590 and Setanta Sports. On the show tonight, unfortunately, no anniversary cake. That is all done. But we do have a roundtable for your listening pleasure. A raucous night of weather at BMO Field forces TFC to take the pitch this morning and come up just a little bit short in CONCACAF Champions League play. Steven Hart selects his 19 men for World Cup qualifying next month. We'll go over that in just a little bit. Also later in the show, Arsenal get their important win in Italy, Manchester City get their French midfielder, and of course the Champions League draw is now all set. All of that and much more on today's edition of The Soccer Show. Nigel will be back next week. It is nice to be here alongside you, and what I would think is the studio is quite intimidating. I've never been in here before, but you guys have made it to the big time now compared to our little dinky studio on the other side of the campus here. This is quite impressive.
Well, first of all, welcome to the Soccer Show. Welcome back to the Soccer Show.
Yes.
And yes, it's a beautiful studio, and it can be intimidating, especially when Nigel is there.
Right.
So, I mean, tonight will be a little bit less pressure, and maybe we'll be able to talk a little bit more.
And happy 5th year anniversary. And I will let you guys talk as much as possible. But 5 years have gone by fast. Eh? I mean, I heard you guys last week. I could not believe that.
Yeah, it's amazing. We were amazed over the fact that we have been here 5 years. And you know, the good thing is that there's a lot of people that care about our show. And I think it's important for us to talk about the Canadian game, the Canadian players, the Canadian issues. And we've got two great guests tonight that are going to talk about Canadian issues tonight.
Absolutely. Let's introduce them to my right is John McGrain, former Canadian defender who capped 12 times for his country, also member of the Ontario and Canadian Soccer Hall of Fames. John, thanks for coming in. Appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And to my left, Dino Rossi, president and co-owner of Milltown FC, who you guys play just about maybe 10 minutes away from where I guess we both live. I didn't realize how close we do live, but
yeah, we're neighbors.
We're pretty much neighbors, so.
Yeah, no, we're it's fun. Milton's a good town, and they've supported our club really well. So, you know, we've had a good season, and we're looking for more success.
Lots to get to on the show tonight. Let's not waste any time. As we mentioned as the show began, game this morning. Mm-hmm. I've never seen a game at BMO Field at 10:15, 500 people in the stands. For those who don't know, Toronto FC was supposed to play FC Dallas Wednesday night in the CONCACAF Champions League, but obviously Mother Nature had her way with the game, and at about 11:30 last night, it was canceled. So CONCACAF decided the game to go this morning. And unfortunately, because if you look at the schedule, this was probably the biggest game of the season for the team by far, knowing where they are in the standings and what's at stake in the Champions League. But just kind of unfortunate that, you know, 500 people end up showing up for what the game had a lot riding on it for TFC today.
Well, it was TFC's last hurrah, last chance to accomplish something in year five, and for it to be played at 10:15 this morning in front of, as you said, Alex, 450, 500 people, it was very eerie. I was telling Dino in the car that you could hear every word from every player. It was kind of because you never hear that with all the fans. You don't get a chance to hear the dialogue between the players. Today, you could hear everything. It was it was really eerie, as I described it.
And obviously, that's advantage away team. I mean, you know, both teams had to play last night. Fatigue was obviously going to be a problem. But if FC Dallas comes in where they've already won here a couple of times and they look around and see 500 people in the stands at 10:15, I mean, you'd have to think that is some sort of advantage to the away side.
Well, even when the original game was scheduled for Wednesday, there wasn't a huge crowd, but the supporters in the South End were right behind the team, and they were loud and boisterous, and I'm sure that gave the team a bit of a lift, even though they were struggling in that game. So to have to replay in front of, you know, no support, they're so used to having such strong support that I guess it definitely would have worked in Dallas's favor, and they did get the result today, right? So,
and I guess, John, looking at where they are in the regular season and looking at the importance of these games right now, I mean, what can a tournament like the CONCACAF Champions League mean to our inventor, knowing that they're still really working around a fairly new group? They got 3 points from 2 games. They got to go to Mexico. They got to go to FC Dallas. So there's still a lot of tough games to come. But at least it's something for the TFC fans to kind of grab onto in what's been, you know, another frustrating season.
Well, I mean, like Bobby, I mean, I've been a season's ticket holder for 5 years now. And we're now in the fifth year of a four-year program. And for fans in general, and I'm speaking as a fan, not as a soccer pundit, but it's been a disappointing ride for the fans. I thought we'd be farther along than what we are right now. But that being said, I went to the game last night because it's a CONCACAF championship, and again, came back very, very disappointed by the quality of play. If they didn't get a result, which they didn't get today, they have to go down to Mexico and they have to try and get a result in Mexico. And as Bob and I know, we've been on many teams playing in Mexico. That's going to be a very, very difficult thing to try and do. And you need that result to get a second place.
And if there's anything good at looking at some of the other results of some of the MLS teams that have already gone down to Mexico and gotten results, I think, Bobby, we've already seen two teams. But
yes,
John talks about the quality right now with Aaron Vinter's men. Do they have the quality to go down there? Maybe not get a win, but get a result. Because in this group, you'd probably need, what, 9 to 10 points maybe to finish top two, and they got 3 out of 2 games. So they're going to need to go down to both Dallas and Mexico and get some results, and we all know that's not going to be easy.
Well, you know, today's result was important for TFC, and John's right, and you're correct, Alex. It's going to be very difficult. I think what disappoints me about this squad, and I know that they're changing as we go. I mean, the players are being dropped off. They're coming on. You know, it's more like, you know, there's so many holes in the dike, we ran out of fingers here. We really need some players that the fans can hope that will become permanent fixtures. Right now, I think there's about 3 or 4 of them, and no more. And so there's a lot of work in terms of getting this team to where, for instance, FC Dallas is. And Dallas is a quick team, especially up front, with 3 or 4 weapons that can go by players with the type of speed that they have. A TFC doesn't have anybody of that quality. And I think that's really where the difference is, because when the game is on the line and both teams are fighting hard and everybody's giving everything they've got, in the end, it's the quality that wins. And it's the quality that's lacking with TFC.
Dino, what do you make of today's result? I think it was the biggest game of the year, and it was unfortunate 500 people could be in there. But you you have your finger on the pulse when it comes to this game, and you see the quality on this team. Is there a lot for fans to be encouraged with, putting aside everything that they've gone through? And I understand that. But looking at this group, can they build on the rest of this season and having these rest of these league games, or these CONCACAF Champions League games, is that going to help them down the road?
Well, I tend to agree with Bobby in that I don't really see a lot of what you'd call, you know, building blocks on this team, but there are a few. You know, Julian de Guzman has seemed to have resurrected himself in the last little bit. He just seems to have found a new spark. I like Torsten Frings a lot. I like the keeper situation, and that's important. You know, I mean, with our club, we're really big about building from the back. You have to have good, strong keepers, and they have good keepers. I even think Kosic is a pretty solid keeper. I'm just concerned as far as the quality going forward. I don't think that they have a creative player in the middle that is going to really dominate the game and control the pace of the game. And pace is a problem too. This, you know, you can talk as much as you want about playing possession and 4-3-3 and whatnot, but this is a really physical league. This is a quick league. And if you don't have players, athletic players who can change the pace of the game and give the defenders trouble, you're going to have problems winning and being consistent, and Champions League is going to be the same. You're playing against MLS team right now. The Mexican team is going to be tough. So I'm worried, you know, I'm worried that this is their season. Like, this is the what they're playing for now, because I really don't think playoffs is a realistic goal at this point. They're just too far out. But having lost today is going to really make it very difficult for them to move forward.
Well, and you talk about having to fill some of those holes on the team, and I guess we can look at Torsten Frings, and again, today, he started in the back four, and we saw the first couple games, Bob, when he was brought over from Germany, where they slotted him in the midfield, and he was getting the ball from the defenders, and he was creating. I mean, he's got great vision on the field, but unfortunately, the lack of depth at center back forces Vinter to put him there, and then that obviously leaves a bit of a hole in midfield, so it's kind of a catch-22. You know he's good in both places, but where is he more utilized? And like Dino said, kind of creatively going up front again today seemed like it was lacking a little bit.
Well, I think Torsten is best for this team at the back. I think he's a perfect free man. You can call it a 3-4-3, but he's playing the sweeper position. So, you know, Harden is marking, Eckersley's marking, Bormann is marking, and he's free. And that's where he should be, because if he plays in the TFC midfield the way he did a couple of games that I saw him, sooner or later the league's going to break him. He's 34 years old and physically probably has seen better days. And I think his experience is needed at the back. Is, you know, I think whatever I've seen so far at the back is really where his talents are most effective for the team.
And it's only a handful of games, but I would think Julian de Guzman has at least upped his game just a little bit. He seems to be a little bit healthier, and maybe that makes the decision a bit easier, John, to keep Torsten in the back if Julian can kind of get back to where we saw in previous Gold Cups when he came over to TFC, when all the fans were really excited that he was coming over.
Well, my biggest concern, when it comes to TFC is two things. Number one is team chemistry. And the second thing is if you're bringing in 45 players or 35 players, how many players are brought in? Who's making the decision to bring these guys in? Don't they do their homework to find out whether they can play before they come in? Or do you have to wait until they play for three or four games and then get rid of them? That affects team chemistry. They start to question the type of job that people at the top are making right now. And you talk about Julian de Guzman. I mean, he has been a major disappointment for this organization from the day he was signed. And I don't blame Julian de Guzman because he's doing the best he possibly can. But when you pay a guy close to $2 million a year to play for TFC, and your best player, which is Dwayne Di Rosario, is making 25% of that, and you don't reward him, you don't think that affects what happens inside the dressing room. So I think if Julian had come in and played like a $2 million player, there'd be no issues whatsoever. To me, too little, too late.
What do you think's been the issue? Because I know Julian de Guzman has been talked about so much. Why hasn't it worked out? Is there a simple answer, or is it? It's just one of those questions where you kind of sit back and say it's one of those things that it just hasn't panned out the way they wanted it to.
It's all about talent. I mean, it doesn't take a lot to recognize talent.
But if he can play for Deportivo and come over, I mean, where? I mean, that's where I struggle, is that he played at such a high level and he came over and the drop off would just seemed to be so significant.
But the question becomes, what did you expect him to be? You know, the fact that he was paid the wage that he's being paid, that's what it took to get him here, right? Because he had offers back in Europe. Maybe they weren't as great as he would have liked, and that's why he opted here. But that's what it was going to take to get him to leave Europe and the lifestyle he had over there and all that good stuff to come back here into a pressure cooker. Because I mean, I think he's smart enough to know that coming back home, the floodlights are going to be pointed directly at him. You know, he was going to be the focal point, no matter that Dwayne was on the team and whatnot. I'm just not sure that TFC had realistic expectations of this player. He's a holding midfielder. He's a ball winner. He's never has been really a creative force. He had that one really good Gold Cup for Canada where he did a lot of great things and got some highlights, but that's not what he is, and I think people expected, you know, something that he's not. And so the expectations were too high, and he unfortunately hasn't met them. But he's still a good player, and I think he was hurt a lot and maybe had a hard time, you know, fitting in and maybe just didn't have the players around him to kind of take advantage of what skills he does have.
If I may jump in just for a second, what you've got here is you've got three DP players, designated players. These are the three guys that you build your team around. Usually you want to either do one at the as a center back, sometimes you want to do one as an attacking or creative midfielder, and you always try to find out one that's going to put the ball in the back of the net. Now, we've had DPs here for, what, going on 5 years. We've had none of those.
Yeah.
So it doesn't come back to the players that are playing. It comes down to the decisions that are made at the top to bring these players in, because it is not difficult to do. If you know the game and you understand the game, it takes you 5 minutes to be able to do that. Second thing is this. Aaron Winter comes in, and I hear from a lot of people, including Bobby, that's met him, he's a great guy. He's a wonderful player in his day, okay? But the problem is he's come in with the Dutch system, and the Dutch system is a certain style of play. But what he's tried to do is impose a system on the players rather than building a system around the players. So he's imposing a system that the players are not able to play. So when you play out the back for the first five or six games of the season, you get your bum smacked because the players can't play. Now he's trying to adapt it to another way. Well, it's too late because your confidence has been shattered. So my feeling is that until you have somebody at the top to be able to get the kind of players in here who can play, then you'll get 25,000 every single game.
And a very quick turnaround for Toronto FC, who host San Jose on Saturday night. Much more to come on The Soccer Show when we come back. Stephen Hart names his 19-player squad for the first two qualifiers next month. We'll get to that. It is The Soccer Show on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590, and Setanta Sports. Soccer Show continues on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590, and Setanta Sports. Alex Sixero in for Nigel Reed this week, who will be back next week. You know where he went, Bobby? Is he back in
his homeland? Well, he went to England. He has this annual tournament with his brothers.
Golf tournament?
Yeah, he never wins.
No. You guys have
hopefully golfed. Well, we have, yeah, but Nigel gets a little nervous on the golf course.
You better than him?
Slightly.
You just don't want to rub it in.
No, I don't want to rub it in.
Bobby Rushi to my right. John McGrain, a Canadian defender, capped 12 times for the country, joins us as well. And Dino Rossi, president and co-owner of Milltown FC, joining us here on this Thursday evening. We will get to much more in the latter portion of the show, including a massive win for Arsenal yesterday at Udinese. And the Champions League draw is out. And there are some tasty groups, including one. I don't like the cliche group of death because I think too many people use it, but there is one group that it's four pretty good teams in one group, so we'll discuss that in just a little bit. But for those who missed it, Canadian men's national team head coach Stephen Hart selecting his 19-player squad today for the first two qualifying games. It's the second qualifying round in CONCACAF. The first game goes next Friday against St. Lucia at BMO Field, and then 4 days later, it's a trip to Puerto Rico on September the 6th. You guys have had a chance to look at the 19-player squad. Aside from a few players that perhaps haven't got in much soccer so far, with this being preseason at all in many places, it looks like he selected, I guess, the best squad he possibly could. And, you know, they have six extra games to get into the third round of qualifying, which I would think is a good thing to get in as many games as possible. But, Bob, we'll start with you. I mean, it's 16 of the 19 players he had in the Gold Cup, so he thinks this is the best group he's got possible.
Well, I think this is Canada. I don't know where the other players are, if there are. I'd like to know where they are. If there are players that are missing, I don't know who they are. These are the players that that represented Canada in the Gold Cup, and it's a good thing that they're all here, because I think that Stephen Hart needs as much time with his top, you know, 19 players. And, you know, they're going to have a tough game against Puerto Rico, especially away from home, on the 6th of September, the second against St. Lucia. My goodness, you'd like to think that one, you know, Canada should be able to handle. And before I pass it on to my colleagues, I just I want to keep making a plea that when your national team plays here in Toronto and you're listening to this show from the greater Toronto area, you know, make sure you're at the game and wear red and support your team. That's my message.
Now, all three of these first home games are going to be at BMO Field, but let's just say Canada is going to get to the next round. It's still to be determined where these home games are going to be played, and we know there's other venues outside of Toronto that Canada can play their games. But when you think about it, does it make sense to? I mean, my thinking is this national team stadium was built for the national team, so should every single game not be here? Or do you think if we get to that point, Edmonton may want a game, Montreal may want a game? Because I think a lot of people are going to be talking about that.
I don't see Edmonton being in the mix anymore. I think they've gotten rid of the grass at Commonwealth, and now it's football turf with lines on it for the Eskimos. So I was told that they're out of the mix, I think, for at least now. Vancouver obviously is going to have a beautiful facility at BC Place, but then you have the logistical issues as far as if that was going to be your one, you know, your home game, and guys have to fly in from Europe or wherever they are to Vancouver, you know, you're putting a lot of extra miles on the guys, and that's difficult. And I think, again, that's going to be field turf too, when the players made a big stink about wanting to play on grass. That's why they wanted to play at Saputo when BMO had turf. So I still think the bulk of your national team home games are going to be at BMO and at Saputo.
I guess the big question now is, if this is the same group we saw in the Gold Cup, what is it going to take for them to get over the hump, so to speak? And you would hope, again, John, they can get over the hump with teams that they should beat, frankly. I don't want to look at the FIFA rankings because I don't make much of them, and Canada's the highest ranked team of the four in this.
We improved three spots, by the way.
To 102.
We're at 102 now.
That's right.
Yeah, but we were in our 50s or 60s not that long ago, so these things don't mean much. match.
So you look at the squad, John. You know, Steven Hart has said in the final third at the Gold Cup, that's where they were really lacking, and they also started slow. So it seems like if there's two things he's going to work on here with these six games available, that's one thing. But you look at the players, you know what their strengths are. What do you think Steven Hart should do with this team? What do you think is the best way going forward to say, this is the most we can get out of this group? Because as we've seen, these are the guys that when it comes to the third round against some of the tougher teams in CONCACAF, that Canada has always had trouble with.
Well, in my opinion, if it's about Steven Hart keeping his job, this is a team he wants to put on the field. It's as simple as that. Is that good for Canadian soccer? No. We do not have a long-term strategy with respect to our national program, and that ties in to long-term player development. That being said, you've got guys in the squad who are 30, 31, one guy's 35, and then there's a couple of guys, 33. This is a squad that failed us in the Gold Cup. This is a squad that played against a 10-man Guadeloupe and could have lost the game, never mind just tying it. So one has to wonder what the strategy is going in to the next World Cup, which is in 3 years, I believe. Mm-hmm. So if it's about getting past this group here right now, then this is a squad you want to do. But you've got to have a plan B here. You've got to have some young players coming up to be able to filter into the system. Sorry, go ahead.
I think the point, though, John, is where are they? Do we have young players? Dino, you and I speak about this all the time.
There's a big gap. There's a drop-off. We have a generation here of players, and then we have another group of really young players who are not ready for prime time. These are not international-level players at this point. So right now, the goal is to try to do the best to qualify for the World Cup. And this group, plus a few guys who are missing, you know, you have Marcel Dion, who can't come in for this round, but I'm sure he will be part of it. There's a couple others, Rob Friend. I mean, you know, he's not really done a lot for Canada, but you know, he's an international level player for Canada. There's a big gap, and I don't know how they're going to bridge it anytime soon.
Well, there's something called gamesmanship, and gamesmanship is something that's been played against us for many, many years. When you go down and play in Costa Rica, and you go down and play in Mexico in particular, they'll play you at 12 o'clock in the afternoon in Toluca, where it's 95 degrees and you're a mile and a half up in the air and you're desperate for oxygen. And they will use that to their advantage. Why are we not playing these games in St. John's, Newfoundland in November when the Mexicans or the Costa Ricans are coming in, and as soon as they walk onto the field, the first thing they're thinking about is I've got to go back and get a pair of gloves on. We've got to do whatever it takes to help us win. And if we're not on the same level as these other players as far as skill level is concerned, let's try something else. I mean, playing at a BMO field, that's, you know.
Have to have facilities. And that's a massive problem in this country. And I agree with you, John. Absolutely agree with you. Gamesmanship is something that we don't do well.
We don't.
We're far too polite. But the Canadian government, federal government, the provincial governments, municipalities have completely let down the sport of soccer, which is the number one participation sport in this country, by completely ignoring the facility deficit that exists. Look at the Greater Toronto Area. Nothing has been built in 30, 40 years.
But the real issue, Dino, because as I probed you with regards to like where is the next generation, the real miss here is that our governing bodies are so politically focused on their own agendas that they forget they forget what the game needs in this country. And what the game needs in this country is more senior expression, more aspirations for young kids. Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver, if those are the three epicenters that the country is hoping that player development is going to come out of, then we're in for a big rude awakening.
Yeah, but the reality is that those three clubs really can only touch a very small number of people. We have to be realistic about what soccer is in this country, which is a participation sport. I mean, largely this elite soccer is almost like a bad word. Like it's a bad phrase. It's like it's verbatim.
How many Canadian players play on the Vancouver Whitecaps right now?
I think we have two legitimate ones and one that was born in Canada but is really a Swiss international. So that's we have two. Okay. And if some of those clubs had their way, there wouldn't have been any.
Okay, outside of Julian de Guzman, I mean, how many in Toronto do you have?
Oh, there's
on a regular
Stinson
basis.
And
no, I'm talking about playing. I'm talking about starting lineups.
Not many.
Exactly. Yeah. So in other words, if this is where we're supposed to get our player development from our professional clubs, they're dropping the ball on this as well.
We only got a couple minutes here. I figured we should talk about David Hoilett and Jonathan DeGuzman. Whether we feel like we should talk about it is one thing, but I felt like we should bring it up. Both were not named to the squad. Jonathan DeGuzman is still waiting to get on the Dutch national team. Looking at their midfield, I don't know how that is going to be possible. And David Hoilett apparently is in contract talks with Blackburn, and Steven Hart has said in the past, once his club contract situation is done, then he'll make his decision. But I think it's gotten to the point. A lot of people feel this, and I feel the same way. If they don't want to play for Canada, it's probably just a waste of time.
But I don't even think it's them. I think it's the agent. This is a business decision that these guys are making. And I think before they make a decision to play with their heart for the country that I really believe that they want to play for, which is Canada, their agents get in between and suggest that perhaps they should wait, that Fabio Capello might be interested in Hoilett sooner than later, and now DeGuzman apparently has got this big opportunity in Spain. Yeah.
Where is Bert van Marwijk going to play Jonathan DeGuzman on the Dutch national team? They're now number one in the FIFA ranking. Again, I don't make much of the FIFA ranking, but it just seems so easy to me. Where is he going to fit in that side? They're just too good. Why not just come over?
Dino has some information on that.
Well, no, I mean, he is on track. I mean, it's being widely discussed amongst his inner circle that he is on track to become a member of the Dutch national team at some point in the not too distant future.
But would they not have called on him already?
Well, they called on him to go and represent Holland at the Olympics. So, I mean, while that's not a full senior cap, that showed an interest. And now that he's moving to a really big club and going to be playing Champions League, I think he's going to be right in the spotlight.
When did playing for Canada, playing for your country, become about money? I know that's the way.
I know it's a business.
But if there's something that burns my backside more than anything else, is that if you have grown up here and learned the game as a youngster, and all these coaches and all the money that the province has put in the national program to develop you as a player, when you get to a certain age, then you go to Europe or South America, and then you become a really good professional. At what point do you pay it back?
But those two guys never did get developed here. They really didn't.
Ugh.
On that note, we have to take a break. Time is not our friend. Much more to come. It is The Soccer Show, Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590, and Satanta Sports.
Make your friends weep with envy. Win wicked prizes inside the fan club. Join today at fan590.com.
It is The Soccer Show, Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590, and Satanta Sports. Alex Ixero, Bobby Arushi, John McGrain, and Dino Rossi here in this beautiful, beautiful studio on this Thursday night. We'll get to some Champions League draw discussion in just a bit. But, Dino, I know we, as we were discussing the CSA and World Cup qualifying last segment, I know there was something we kind of wanted to touch on before we get to the stuff from Europe. And I guess from a general perspective, and you and John and Bobby all have your hand on the pulse when it comes to soccer in this country, but where are we now when it comes to the CSA branding itself and, I guess, bringing it to a point where, is respectability the right word? Is that one you would use, or where are we from that sense?
You know, things have been broken for a very long time, and we're seeing the results of that now, where we were talking before the break about that there isn't really a big pool of talent. You know, Steven Hart's job is not an easy one when he has to call in his roster. There's just not a huge pool of players for him to choose from. But, you know, the CSA and the provinces have a big task ahead of them. There seems to be a legitimate appetite to push the sport of soccer in a different direction. So, you know, I said before that elite soccer, high-level, high-performance soccer is almost like a dirty word in many parts of the soccer community because everybody's so focused on participation and access to the game. But now there's a lot of work being done. The CSA has its Wellness to World Cup program. It's a long-term player development strategy, and they're trying to activate it in all the different provinces. And it's difficult because not every province is on the same footing. You know, some provinces are very, very recreational, and some are much more elite, like Ontario. So the OSA is doing a lot of work too to plan a future for the game where we're training and developing our players and our coaches and our referees better in a more professional way, and instituting better competition models, which is a really big problem. And I'm sure Bobby could tell you about the mess that youth soccer is, fixing those problems so that 10 years from now, 12 years from now, we actually have big pools of players playing at a high level.
So John, are the right people in place? Is that still a big concern, or are we making some headway from that perspective? The decision makers, are they ones that can lead the CSA right now to where it should be?
Now, is there a reason why you give me all the hardball questions?
That's why we brought you in.
No.
Yeah.
No.
And
no,
what will it take to put those people in that spot?
The problem we have at the CSA level, and I have a great appreciation for a lot of the hard work that they do, and it's sometimes overlooked when we're looking at the big picture. The CSA, the national program, should be run by professionals, and it should be the best paid, most experienced individuals to run those national programs. All the players from the World Cup team all the way down to the under-19s, most are part of professional teams. And when you bring them into the national program, they're administered and they're coached by people that I believe are less than what they should be. And the player development at that point is hurting us. And if you go all the way back to the under-12s and under-14s, and I'm only talking at the CSA level, but this is applicable all the way straight through the provinces. You look at Ontario, there's 500,000 kids playing soccer. We are the engine of the country. We should be producing a lot more than what we are right now. Better quality players. I think it's incumbent upon these provinces to hire the best people they can to develop the players that are necessary and work hand in glove with people like Dino's group and the CSL and other player development groups and leagues that are out there. But is it there yet? No, it's not. And there's a reason why it's not there, but that's probably a discussion for another day.
Bobby?
I'll say this again, and I've said this many times over 5 years. This province, especially if we're going to look at Ontario, is set up perfectly to put 10, 12, 14, 16 cherries on centers of excellence, if you want to call them. We have too many clubs in this province, and we need to define, regional champions, clubs that do it right, that have a lot of participation, that they are known in their communities, they're sponsored well, they have a lot of money, and they need to focus on a senior expression. When I grew up, I was lucky enough to play in the National Soccer League, and John did as well. And that helped our development for a player happens when he or she is exposed to the best possible competition, the best possible soccer experience at a high level. We don't have that in this country, and we can't keep avoiding it. And those clubs that are able to put the cherry on the parfait and they refuse to do it, those are responsible for the game not moving forward in the way it should go.
Well, Bobby's never going to get an argument from me because I'm a huge believer in the importance of senior competitive soccer. It's the area that has been most neglected. I mean, most of the senior competitive soccer that exists is essentially recreational, but with somewhat higher standards. We really need our community clubs to get serious about senior competitive soccer. It doesn't necessarily have to be professional, because amateur clubs and amateur senior teams can do great things as part of a larger development strategy. I would challenge the CSA. I would challenge the provinces. I would challenge the professional clubs that we have to get behind creating our own FA Cup here. You know, taking the Voyageurs Cup, which is a fantastic tournament, and making it open to any club in this country. If they can meet the standards that are set, then we should make this wide open, because that single-handedly will do more to spur interest at that level of soccer and will get people really excited.
It would be interesting to have it this year, because I'm not quite sure if Toronto FC would win it.
No comment.
Okay. Did you say no comment?
No comment.
That's not why you're here. Have a comment.
Boy, time flies. We got a few minutes left here. Let's go overseas just quickly, and Arsenal lose another. Sam Aaron-Nasri goes to Manchester City, and where Roberto Mancini plays his 12 or 13 attack-minded players is one question maybe we can have for another day. But specifically, it seems like Arsenal is the team in England that everyone is talking about right now, and they don't have a win in their first two games. They had to go to Italy, and they had to get a 2-1 win over Udinese to get into the Champions League group stage, which is now, I think, the 15th straight year under Arsene Wenger where they've made it. But if you look at what the Manchester City's doing, what the Manchester United's are doing, and what the Chelsea's are doing, they're spending, spending, spending. Arsenal have money to spend. They just sold two of their best players in Fabregas and Nasri. But I guess the issue has been Arsene Wenger has not spent that money anywhere, and you could see where fans of this team are kind of losing it, because if you drop out of the top four in England, and Arsenal haven't been there for quite some time, boy, that is worth being the top story over there. And at least the win at Udinese has kind of saved them so far, because they get that Champions League money. But they've been the story so far in the EPL. I don't think there's any question.
Well, I think the championship is definitely going to be battled in Manchester this year. I think United is by far the best team in England again this year. I think Chelsea's going to struggle this year. I don't see the same type of Chelsea performance that we've seen over the last 5 years. Just from the first two games I've seen Chelsea play, haven't been impressed. Arsenal's not deep enough, and it's going to be very difficult to knock United off the top block.
Liverpool looks like they might be okay, but no, definitely it's going to be a battle of Manchester, and it's going to be a battle of the team with all the names and the big money versus the team with the real team spirit, you know, because that Manchester United team, even though they've got tons of dough behind them too, but they just seem to be a real, you know, squad. Doesn't matter who they fit in.
They're doing it with young players this year.
Which
so
is nice.
Far, it's only a couple of games, but
yeah, it was nice to see that they, you know, the way they played on the weekend. I don't watch a ton of EPL, but I caught the Manchester United game, and it was well played, and their young players look serious.
The Champions League group stage draw took place earlier today. We've all had a chance to look at the groups A through H, and I would think we would all agree Group A with Bayern Munich, Villarreal, Manchester City, and Napoli, who, aside from Inter and AC, maybe a top three, top four team in Italy. They've had some pretty good signings this offseason. That would be the group of death, I think we would all agree.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, when you look at, I think Napoli came in second last year, didn't they?
Second or third, yeah.
Second or third. Then you look at Manchester City, come in second or third. Then you look at Bayern Munich, come in second or third. I mean, you're talking about not only the second or third best team in their divisions, but you're also talking about the three best leagues in the world right now. So I would definitely put those games on pay-per-view.
No, but you have teams from the four best leagues in the world, and they're all ambitious clubs. You know, Bayern has something to prove. Man City has something to prove, because, you know, with the team, you said where they're going to play all their talented players. They've got FA Cup, they've got Carling Cup, they've got League, and they've got Champions League. There's a lot of soccer to go around for all these big name players, and it's going to be a challenge for Mancini to figure out who he is going to play and how he's going to have continuity.
Arsenal's in a tough group with Marseille, Olympiacos, and Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah.
So that's, once again, Arsenal's going to be tested in the first round of Champions, and even Chelsea has a little bit of work to do with Valencia and Bayer Leverkusen.
And that's the one they just can't win. Doesn't matter who's managing. That's the one that Chelsea always kind of struggle to get. So,
no, I mean, this is Champions League. This is the tournament that turns everybody's crank. This is the one that gets people to, you know, get out of work early and head over to the pub and play hooky. You know, this is fun. So, you know, when you look at this and the opportunity, the possibilities are endless, and you just can't wait till they start kicking off and having some games so that we can continue this debate and have some results to argue over.
What kind of town is Napoli, Bob? Have you been there very often?
Absolutely.
I was actually there earlier Napoli this
is,
year.
Napoli is one of the most fascinating places on this planet. It has some of the most creative, outgoing, fun-loving people. there's many stories that come out of Napoli. It's the city of song, of Italian folklore. I think some of the greatest soccer fans in the world. Of course, everybody remembers Maradona's debut when he got off the plane and he went to the San Paolo Stadium, and there was 90,000 fans waiting for him. Mm. And all he did was stand in the middle of the park and he was juggling this big inflated balloon, and the people were just going crazy. There's a story of the Italian World Cup in 1990 when Argentina played Italy in the semifinal, and there was a Rai television who went to a lady who was selling vegetables and said to her, "Tomorrow Italy plays Argentina. You know, who are you going to root for?" And she said, "How dare you? How dare you tell me that? How dare you? I'm Italian, and this is Napoli, and Napoli is one of the great Italian cities. But don't ever talk bad about Maradona because he's like my son." So that's Napoli.
He's still revered. He's still revered.
I think there's this three statues of Maradona in three different piazzas in Napoli. So
you think he'll manage again?
He shouldn't.
Isn't he in the Middle East right now? Doesn't he have a gig in the Middle East? I thought he had a gig in the Middle East.
Tripoli.
Somewhere. Somebody with a lot of money threw it at Diego. But no, he's not a manager.
We got to wrap this up. This was a lot of fun, Bobby. Thanks for having me.
It was fast, Alex.
You guys need 2 hours. I've heard your listeners from tweets to emails. I listen to you guys every week. You need a 2-hour show. So hopefully you can get it.
Hurry back.
Soon. Yeah, it's been great. John, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it. And Dino, thanks for coming as well. This has been a lot of
great
fun.
Great job, Alex.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. Also, thanks to those behind the glass, Jen Rolnick, Igor Henriques, and Dan Riccio. Nigel will be back next week. If you want to tweet him, you can at Nigel_Reed. See, I do remember that from listening to your show.
No, I'm tweetless.
This has been the Soccer Show on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590, and Satanta Sports.